Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now!
Productions presenting Black Herb America, and I'm your guest, Kenny Jones. I air Black Herb America airs on Tuesday evenings from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. On Saturday, we have Provocative Thought by Carter Sneed, also airs 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Also, We Talk Production is seeking sponsors and advertisers to assist us with a financial cost of running of these programs. But advertisement will be a share. You advertise with us, we put your product or services on our upcoming website, which will be here any day now, and our Facebook page and also other social media outlets. Now, I just want, before I bring on my guests, I just want to say something that happened this week that really affects my heart, and that is the children that are being separated from their parents due to the policy that is set by this administration. What behooves me is that this administration is blaming others for the action that his administration taken. I mean, I saw a heartfelt story documentary last night, and it really touched me. And these children, as a matter of fact, it was so bad that they wouldn't show the video. They just showed, we just heard audio. And I think, and that is a crime. When are we are going to start holding this cult, I mean this administration, the accountability, how he is running this country, not only this country, around the world. And speaking around the world, I bring on a guest, an author, that manager, I hope I'm saying these words right, because I don't say these words every day. He managed the Artiste Society, and he is an expert in the African Despero Republic or slash experience. And his name is Mr. Donald Brown. Welcome to the show, sir.
Kenneth, thank you so very much for inviting me. It's my honor.
Well, good, good. I'm glad to have you on. And hopefully that you could open some of our minds, to, and this term is not new. This term has been around for a couple of decades, has it not?
This term has been around for several centuries, in fact, Kenneth.
Okay.
If you go back into the early 1800s, late 1700s, there were people talking about the African diaspora or the African experience when there were attempts made by black loyalists, blacks during the Revolutionary War who were loyal to the British. Once that war was over and the British lost, many of the blacks who were known as black loyalists moved to Nova Scotia, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They settled
right.
in Nova Scotia. And from Nova Scotia, many of them then went with the help of the British to the west coast of Africa and started a settlement in Sierra Leone. So the whole concept of going back to Africa and the African diaspora is not new, not only in terms of blacks within the continent of the United States, but also blacks within South America, i.e. Brazil.
Brazil and the Caribbean Islands. What, Haiti got,
Absolutely.
What, 6 million? Haiti got 6 million?
You might have the number, but there are hundreds of millions of us scattered outside
yeah.
the continent of Africa.
And see, when you speak of the black experience, the average person, the average African-American in the United States only think of us, but there are African people all over the world, from England to South America, the Fiji Islands. We spread out all over the world. But when people speak about the African diaspora, why black Americans feel they're not included in that? The average.
That's a good question, Kenneth, and that probably has many answers. A lot of them have disassociated themselves, and I'm not here to plant. I'm not here to find fault. I mean, the reality is that many blacks have put their stakes in their interests and think their well-being and future lies within the United States, and obviously have made every attempt to assimilate and be part of the American culture. That's a choice they've made. And I'm not going to say that that's a lack of knowledge, but that's a decision they've made. And I think that holds true in the other places that you named around the world, who view themselves as being citizens of that particular country that they're in, with all the attempts of becoming part of that citizenry, to be assimilated within that culture. And that's not unique to people of African descent and not unique to people of African descent living here in the United States. If you look at the history of Jews, I mean, there were Jews, particularly Jews in Germany prior to the rise of Nazism, who viewed themselves as being Germans first and, oh, by the way, just by accident being Jewish. So they saw themselves as being German Jews or Jews and made every attempt to become part of the Jewish culture. And so it's not unique. The question becomes only path that people of African descent can or should take in terms of finding a solution to the problem that we face.
When you speak of the path, what path do you recommend that black Americans should start looking at?
It's a path that I offer as an alternative or as an option. It's
right.
Not one, it's a replacement. It's an option.
Right.
And just let me, Malcolm X, for example, offered an option to Dr. King. I'm merely offering an option, and that option or that path, I'm saying what we need to do is begin to consider the establishment of a nation of our own, one in which we are in control, one that reflects our culture, one in which establishes our values. And there's a lot of R's in there and a lot of work to be done. But it can be done. And it won't happen overnight. It won't happen probably in my lifetime. I've probably seen more sunsets than I'll see sunrises. But if I can begin, or if we can begin, planting the seeds and laying out a blueprint for how that can be done, I think it will be there for future generations to pick up that cause and move forward. And I happen to feel that that events, and many of those that you just laid out as an introduction to this program in terms of this current administration and what it's doing, I think events are making people, events are offering an opportunity for people to look at other options here in the United States, because it won't be long before we're going to see a lot of pressure, in my opinion, a lot of pressure coming down on blacks in America, in the Americas, or in the United States, and it's not going to be pleasant.
It's going to start. It's been going on since I was born. Before I
You're
was
right.
born,
You're
a lot
correct.
Of pressure placed on us, where we had to migrate or sell out the order to get ahead. Let me ask you this. Is the United States policy that negative toward their black citizens that we have to really start considering? Because I had someone on a month ago that also said the same thing as you, but he called his movement the Marlene movement, where you got to establish our own politics and what have you. Now you say our own nation. I mean, is the United States policy that negative towards black America, or is it that uncomfortable for us in this country?
I think it's both, but I think it begins with the policy and the mindset and the culture of this country. This country, we came here under a culture and a value system that's basically built on racism. And that's very much part of the, in my opinion, the American society is basically its DNA. Racism's part is American cultural's DNA. It was founded in racism. If you look back in terms of the justification for bringing Africans from the continent and enslaving them here in the United States and in the Caribbean and in South America, it was justified as because they viewed us, they being Europeans, the philosophers, the economists, the social thinkers, developed a rationale that we were subhuman and that we deserved to be treated as something less than human, that we were beasts of burdens, and that culture and that white people were basically, in the European culture, was basically superior to African culture, which they viewed as having absolutely no culture, superior. And that thought process lingers in as part of the DNA of the U.S. society. So my answer to your question is, I think it is part of the U.S. society and part of their culture and their makeup that it makes us very uncomfortable in this country, and that the future and doesn't offer any hope, any real hope for change or solutions.
Well, are you saying, Donald, that we should
mm-hmm.
separate?
Absolutely.
That we should be separatists from everything.
Let me let you
describe.
Go ahead, let me describe a minute ago.
I might
have answered that too quickly, Kenneth.
No. You answered the way you want to answer it, but I just want to remind you, like you said, they brought us over here, and if it wasn't the reason why the economy of this country the way it is, it's from the backs of slaves. But don't we have the right to take what's out? Don't this country belong to us as well? Because we built the damn thing.
No, I understand. And my answer to that is, theoretically, and are putting together a philosophical argument, you're probably correct. But the numbers do not favor us in that regard.
And
we
have
to be realistic. We can't send people out to die for a cause that is brutal. And
how
the numbers are totally against us. Even put this together, even if just those 63 million people who voted for Trump decided to turn arms against us, we wouldn't have a chance. We don't have the numbers.
FYI, 50% of the 63 million probably own a lot of guns and AR-15 in their homes.
Absolutely.
You know, do you think that it will, how do you think the average citizen, the average black citizen in the United States will respond to, you go up to them and say, look, I have a pamphlet here. I think you should read it. You know, it's about us separating, be having our own. I know we already speak on have our own economy. We already talking about that. But you're talking about even going deeper, have our own land, everything from education to financial institution. You know, we got to have our own. How do you think the average black citizen will respond to you when you go to them and say, we have to separate, let's get out of here?
I think, you know, in all honesty, they would say, they would look at me like I'm crazy, or just say they're not doing that. No one wants to face uncertainty.
You got a couple of, I just played one, I just played my intro song. I know Chuck D has been talking about this for the past 20 years. You know, I mean, a lot of young men and women from that generation at one time, you know, the Generation X at one time really felt that way, you know,
mm-hmm.
until the millenniums came along and had their own way of thinking. But
mm-hmm.
What would you say to a person that believes in the inclusion theory?
I would say, look at an alternative. If we provide you an alternative, you, the one who is an inclusionist, have a choice. You can make your choice. You can stay here. That's fine. No harm done. Or you can come to the alternative. And as much as I am not particularly fond on the way the state of Israel was founded, I often use it as an example of it took a few, relatively speaking, a few number of Jews to settle the state of Israel. Many of them, particularly those who were better off, weren't prepared to leave the countries in which they had already settled, raised their families, and were attempting to be, were either included or attempting to become included in the societies or the countries in which they were currently inhabiting. So I think what has to happen, Kenneth, is that you have to show people another way. And you have to do it more than with words. You have to actually create something so that they have an alternative. Because just saying you have an alternative is and offering that as a solution to someone who is already in a tangible situation, no matter how uncomfortable mm-hmm. that might be, or no matter how much they have to justify their existence in this situation, it's much different than offering them something tangible as an alternative. What I want to be able to do is at least start putting together a guideline, not in terms of what has to be done, but how you actually go about doing it. How do you actually go about creating an African diaspora republic on the continent of on the motherland?
How would you start that?
It's going to take. You have to work on many levels. And one of the levels is actually to identify. you identify the company, at least you identify maybe not in terms of the actual land, but you identify the characteristic of the land in which you want to occupy. It should have certain features. It doesn't have to be terribly large because you want something that's manageable and defensible. The other thing I think you have to do is actually begin putting together a constitution. How is this country going to be governed? From the very basics all the way through, how is it going to be governed? What kind of government are you going to have? And it's no accident I refer to it as the African Diaspora Republic, because I think it should be, the type of government should be a representative republic, where people, where the citizens vote for people who represent their interests, as opposed to a monarchy or autocracy or some other kind of one-man rule type operation. I think you have been in that constitution, you begin establishing value systems. There are certain types of core values, in my opinion, that this country that we're talking about, this republic, should represent.
Such as?
You're also working on a level of how you begin financing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to acquire land, there are different ways of doing that. And a lot of, some of it will require financing, some of it required exchange of services. What kind of things do you bring to the table when you begin negotiating the acquisition of land? And you're going to be acquiring it from some established African nation now. I mean, there's no question about that. If the question becomes,
how you think they will view us? How you think they will view us? How you think the African countries will view us, or view the group of trying to do this by land, governing, finance? How you think they will view, and how you think other countries will view us, such as London, the UK, the United States? I know Canberra don't have any problems with this. Canada, you know.
Right.
I mean, there are countries that depends on our labor and our workforce, mm-hmm. even though they don't want to admit, but they do.
Absolutely. And that's a good question. And I can't get into your head, but we're going to run into resistance. And then you're also going to run into those who are willing to support it. My thinking, let me deal with the African countries. So, for example, let's just say that we want, and I'm just throwing this out as a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume that the land we decided that has been identified is part of, and I'm going to throw this country out, part of, say, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Let's just say
mm-hmm.
that. And let's say the size of the land that we think makes sense is something about that covers the same square mile area, say, of New Jersey or Switzerland. I mean, something that's manageable. We're talking about maybe, well, just imagine the state of New Jersey. How would Congo deal with that? Well, let's say the Congo is in need for certain types of services. Say medical services and,
mm-hmm.
and certain types of technical services. And let's say negotiators go in and say, look, in exchange for us, as part of what we bring to this table, is the willingness and ability to bring these type of services and share those with your country and with your people in exchange for certain portions of land. Obviously, you're going to have to bring more to the table than that. But that's just an example of the type of services that we could put together and use those as negotiating tools to acquire land. And why do I say services? Because I think, in my opinion, that African people of African descent here in the United States probably are one of the highest skilled people of African descent in the world. I think we have a lot of things that we – and none of those skills have been wasted and not fully utilized because of the
barriers. All those skills have been locked up. All those skills have been locked out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And even in terms of education, you could use education as a key. But I think the skills that really matter are skills like the artificial intelligence, medical skills, because there's certainly a need, in my opinion, for medical services in many of the African countries. And that we can bring those kind of skills to the continent. Can you imagine setting up something equivalent to a national health research center in an bringing that to the African continent through the form of a African diaspora republic, where you have doctors coming in sort of on the equivalent of CDC here in the United States, where we train doctors, where we study, where the study of diseases are found and cures are found for that. That's all possible. We have the skill base. It's not only in the United States, but Canada, but Cuba, for goodness sake, has a program that they turn out some of the best medical professions doctors in the world.
Well, a lot of Americans go down to study.
Absolutely. So the skills are there. The question becomes, number one, how do you bring them together, and how do you use them as leverage for some particular purpose that benefits us and doesn't benefit, doesn't benefit the countries in which we find ourselves. Doesn't make America look good.
You know what, Don?
Look good.
You speak of Cuba. You speak of Cuba, but Cuba really is the model, really. You talk about separate. They're the most separatist thinking country in this hemisphere.
Oh, Cuba's
Africa,
a very
they have open arms to this. But, you really have to get some people that, I hate to say this, I want to say celebs, but like politicians, corporate leaders who think on that. Because you have some of us that think this way, but suppress it because of the environment they're living or in or working in.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right, Kenneth.
No, so I think, I think you may not have to go too far. It might be just miles away off the coast of Florida, especially if you select the right time. But I know this is hypothetical right now. I know it's developing a blueprint and everything. Why don't they teach these different theories in our educational institutions? Like high school. How about real junior high school?
It is not in the interest of European nations or African or the United States to teach that type of independence. I mean,
did you say in the beginning of the show that racism was the deep? I'm using your words. Racism is the DNA of this country.
Yes.
Would they be? Every time I turn on, I hate watching the news. Every time I turn on the news, they always have a negative perception about, especially about black men. You think they would be like open arms? They might give us a ship to tell us to go. You think they would be open arms?
You think they
would be like giving us a standing ovation? Give us a parade out of here.
Right, it's better to have the enemy, your enemy, close to you than further away. They recognize, I think, that we know them oh so well. If anyone knows the mindset of white Americans and the American culture and the way they think, it's us. We represent a much greater threat to them as an independent entity, collaborating and joining forces with other countries around the world than we do being here within their borders and under their control.
And they still
really
haven't given up our homeland either. Now the Chinese are all in Africa and what have you.
Just imagine if we were an African nation of our own, how we could begin as an African nation, part of the international system of nations, countries and nations, how effective we could be in terms of forming alliances and federations.
They'll blow us off the earth. They'll send a nuclear bomb right to us. That what racism and white supremacy represent. If they
can't, I agree they're capable of doing it. And that's
yes,
another area.
Okay. And they will. They
no,
will.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely correct. But you know, the 21st century is interesting because the whole process and the nature of warfare is going to change. And I think one of the things that always strikes me is the power of hacking and artificial intelligence. How you can literally.
Can you go into a little bit about the artificial intelligence? I know that has to do with a lot of machines and robots and drones and whatnot, but could you go a little deeper on artificial AI concept?
I'm not that knowledgeable of it within a broad perspective, Kenneth, but in terms of a military application, that's where I think it serves great benefits to us also, because it can act as a deterrent. If you have a team, a network, almost a cadre of skilled people in the arts of hacking and breaking into systems, you can hold other countries almost hostage to any kind of hostile action against you. I was recently listening today to a broadcast, and it was talking about how the Americans and the Israelis teamed together to plant a software, a hacking bug, into the Iranian nuclear processing software, and was able
to.
Who
they learned that from? Russia? Who they learned that from? Russia?
I have no idea who they learned it, but they certainly implemented it,
wow.
And really was able to have a major, was able to set back, or become knowledgeable, and maybe set back some portion of the Iranian nuclear program.
You know, as he was talking, you know, and I just want to mention a couple of people in history that kind of had this same type of thought process. Marcus Garvey, they threw him in jail.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Louis Farrakhan in the 80s said that black folks should pull their money resources together and purchase six states. And he identified six southern states as our country. They made him a demagogue. So this is dangerous thought. This is this is not new. This is nothing
right.
new. Others had came up with this this ideology, and it seemed like they had problems with the government all of a sudden. I'm not a conspiracy person, but I'm just giving it's facts. It's in books. You know,
yeah, you're right.
Garvey tried to back the Africa movement. They jailed him on taxes. Matter of fact, they sent him back to, I think it was Haiti or Jamaica.
It was Jamaica. Right.
Farrakhan tried to do it for years. He was on this drum for years. The whole eighth decade of the 80s. And they made him out of Democrat. You know?
Right.
So having our own is a beautiful concept. It falls under black nationalism. It's an old term. It's before Black Lives Matter. It's before pro-black. You know, that was all part of the black nationalist movement. It was not having your own religion and having your own country, having your own family structure and what have you. And it brought in the drugs in our communities.
Right.
So This is dangerous thought. This is very dangerous thought. So how do you see yourself? Or is there an organization that people could reach out to if they is there a committee in this country? You probably don't want to put it over the air or anything. Is there a committee in this country that is planning this right now?
There are more. I'm not the only person thinking this way. Let me put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say that, as I said before, I've seen more sunsets than I'll see sunrises. And the greatest legacy I think I can leave for myself, I mean for my children and for my people, is to actually have a guideline and a blueprint laid out that might not be able to be picked up again for another 20 years or 10 years. Hopefully it won't take that long. But someone will not have to go back and reinvent the wheel. They might have to modify some things and adjust some things. One of the greatest things that Marcus Garvey, Mr. Garvey, did was he left his he documented his opinions and his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he left something that was here longer than him that we can still go to and read and get guidance. And
again, why is this? Well, like I'm sorry for cutting you off, but this question is important to me.
Sure.
Why now we have black superintendents, we have black principals, we have black dean of students. Why is in this book? Why is Marcus Garvey? I mean, Marcus Garvey got streets named after him. Marcus Garvey
right.
got the schools that have his name don't even have his book. Tell
That's
me.
That's quite sad, isn't why it? That's sad.
I was a football coach for 27 years, right? I'm retired, junior high school football coach. And let me tell you this. I've been to schools that was named after Mr. Marcus, the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And let me tell you, not even their so-called black history department, not one writing for Marcus Garvey. Now, that was 10 years ago. That I retired. They may have it now, but I seriously doubt it. Well, you got teachers complaining they got to go get materials for their students.
Yeah, that's quite sad. The mindset is this mindset of someone who, of people who, what do they say, walk the walk, but don't talk the talk, but don't walk the walk, if I can use that
right.
type of cliche. When you just see yourself, when you see that you have no options other than where you are, you're seeing the world myopic through blinders. When you can't even think about having a country and a nation of your own, you just don't even imagine that's possible. And I think that's the case of a majority number of black people in this country and in other people in the African diaspora. The seeds have to be planted. Not only are we talking that you're talking about it being done, but you're actually doing something to make it happen. This is going to be a slow process, Ken. You know, if you look at the founders of the United States, there were only seven of them. Seven guys came together and basically wrote the Constitution of the United States and created a nation. It doesn't take a lot, but once you plant the idea in the seed, you begin having people see an alternative to their current situation, to their present situation. It's up to them then to make a decision whether or not they want to change course and go down another path or stay on their current path. But
you know what, Don?
We have
a lot of artists. You know, we have a lot of artists like Mos Def and Will Smith took his family. They got land in Africa. Mos Def
mm-hmm.
live in Africa. Stokely Carmichael, if he's still living, he was at South Africa. He lived in Africa. So
he lived in Guinea.
Huh?
He lived in Guinea.
Guinea, right. And so a lot of Oprah Winfrey. She has schools in Africa for girls. I wish she'll make up some schools in America for black girls in the United States. But there are a lot of artists, celebs that really. You know what? You see, you're like, man, that's far fetched. Not really. It's being practiced already, but as our history shows, we practice as individuals, not as a collective.
That's true.
You think if Oprah Winfrey will go on her TV station right now, OWN, say, look, I got land in Africa, and I think you should move to Africa and start. You know how many people would jump on that plane, that boat, and go to Africa? If Will Smith, go on CNN right now, be interviewed, and say, look, man, I raised my family in Africa. You know, I got land in Africa. It's cool. I think my people should go. You know how many people would jump on without even developing a blueprint?
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, it might take something like that, I agree with you. That, let me put it like this. I agree with you, Kenneth. That is, you're absolutely correct.
You know, so, I mean, it's already being practiced, but like I said, individually we're doing it. Individually we're writing it, but we're not practicing. And that's been our issue for decades.
Yep.
In centuries.
Yep.
We don't do it as a collective.
Hopefully what we're doing here is offering a structural alternative to that even people like the ones that you named, the celebrities, can say, I am moving and I am part of, or I plan on, you know, buying property or being part of settling in a new state, a new nation on the continent of Africa. But, you know, it's going to be a while. I mean, the heavy lifting has to be done. And as I said before, seven people came together and formed a constitution of the United States. It doesn't take a lot. It takes dedication and a clear thinking to lay out the process.
And you know the resistance and even the resistance from our own people, especially.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd be surprised. It'll be from people, from community organizations, cultural organizations, academia, you know. Because like I said, I think they're already practicing this. Maybe not the government part, but having land over there and helping out over there. They're already throwing that biblical back over there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, it's just the masses. But the few people that do come up with it, that do decide to go through with this plan, go get very muddy for them. And possibly dangerous. Huh?
That's going to be a challenge, and that's why you have to put this stuff in writing. You know, you can't just walk around being a you can't just walk around talking about it. You have to put the piece on the ground and make it happen. You have to actually start structuring it. And once you have it in print and down, individuals don't matter at that given point. Individual leaders are insignificant. It's the idea that you have out there. It's the structure.
Mm.
Because I believe, Kenneth, just let me say this one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I believe it's possible to basically have a de facto African diaspora republic or country without having the land immediately. You can actually put a country together without having the land. The land has to come eventually. But you can put a constitution together. You can begin identifying, you can begin recruiting or laying out the criteria for the citizen, you know, for citizenship. You can begin identifying the skills and recruiting the skills that you need when you need them. You can do these things without actually having land underfoot. And once you start identifying Once you start putting those structures together and identifying human resources who commit themselves to saying, once there's a place to go, I'm prepared to bring my skills to build a nation. You're on your way to building a nation without actually having land.
I want to thank you for coming on the show and excellent information. I'd like to invite you back sometime, you know, so we'll continue our conversation and everything. I really, really enjoy our discussion.
Kenneth, once again, I thank you very much for having me as a guest, and I thank you very much, and the best of luck in terms of your progress and continued success in terms of your podcast.
But thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, Kent.
All right. Interesting. But like I said, there's nothing new. Marcus, he tried it. Lewis tried to organize it. And I hope it one day, like I brought up in Black nationalism. And Black nationalism spreads having your own land, having your own government, having your own self-identity. And I agree with that. I agree with that. There might be possibly others that agree with that. But, always a but, you think the United States is going to let its citizens go that they depend on fighting for them? Who's going to fight their military? Who's going to drive their buses? Who's going to take care of their medical, the medical research? You know, we are part of this country. We have assimilated into their world. I'm not saying assimilation to the world is good or bad, positive, negative. I just say, but we have our own thinking. And like Malcolm said, we do have to start making a migration back home. Back home, I don't mean back home to New Jersey, New York, or to Georgia, or to North Carolina, or to California. Back home where we were born, where our culture, where our DNA is from, as Donald Brown said. And that is our homeland, Africa. But boy, I'm telling you something. That will open some eyes. That will open some eyes. Well, that's all for this week. Don't forget to check out Call to Sleep on Saturday at 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Provocative Thought. I don't know what he's going to discuss this Saturday. Last Saturday, he discussed white privilege. And that's what we do. We try to give you solutions and options and try to get you to think other ways of solving our problems instead of depending on the government. And like I keep on saying almost every week, a lot of these institutions, especially the education institution, especially the criminal justice system, is anti-blackmail. And would you like to have something that's not anti-blackmail? On that note, I am because we are. We are because I am. I see you next week.
Hold it now!